Welcome to the Sober Gay Sunday podcast, a podcast about being gay and sober and not just on Sundays. In this podcast, we'll explore the ins and outs of being queer and sober in a world where drinking and using is woven into the fabric of our culture. This season, we'll be hearing the stories of addiction and recovery from sober gays from all over the world. Every story of recovery is unique in its own way, and every story deserves to be heard. So let's go. In this episode, we welcome Paolo. Paolo's story is one of passion, ambition, empathy, and love. From growing up in Louisiana to a conservative, Republican, alcoholic, workaholic family, to emancipation, drug trafficking, sex work, and circuit parties, Paolo is now in long-term sobriety, has a loving husband, and works in behavioral health with the LGBTQIA+ community. He is also a loving dog dad. Please welcome Paolo. Hey, Paolo, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Excellent. I'm doing good. Doing good. Welcome to the pod. Let's get you started. We're going to have you just start off by telling us your name, your preferred pronouns, and just a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Hi. My name is Paolo. My pronouns are he, him, his, and a little bit about myself. I live in Los Angeles, California, with my husband, Anthony, and our three dogs, Nando, Jazz, and Decatur. And I'll have 9 years sober in October, so about 8.5 years, and I work in treatment in the substance abuse and mental health industry, and I'm in school full time too, getting a degree in behavioral health with an emphasis on trauma, and I'm very involved in the gay recovery community here in Los Angeles. I'm the executive secretary for CMALA for like our huge CMA conference here. So we're about to start getting that going. And my life is full. It's beautiful and full.
That's amazing.
It's when they say in the program, like you have a life beyond your wildest dreams, it sounded so cliche, like in the beginning of my sobriety, but like, honestly, like I can't even talk about how beautiful my life is today. I love it.
So, that's awesome. That's really, really great. Yeah. It sounds busy, but fulfilling for sure.
For sure.
Why don't you start us off from the very beginning, kind of with your first drinking and using experience, and then just take us all the way through your story up until where you are now.
Oh my God. Okay. My story is crazy.
By me. Some of the things sometimes it is shocking. So
yeah, there's pretty big shock value. You know, like thinking back and like looking at where I was to like where I am today, it's just absolutely crazy. But so I grew up in a suburb of New Orleans. I grew up in a city called Slidell, Louisiana, to a conservative Republican racist family. And my first drinking and using was when I was I just turned 15. I'm the youngest Eagle Scout in the state of Louisiana, and so I got my Eagle Scout when I was 15 years old, and shortly after that I started dabbling in like gay phone lines.
I'm 38. I'm old enough to know what I remember. Yes.
And me and my friend from high school, we would like three-way call in. And so we would figure out like whose parents would get the charges that day. And so, you know, that's kind of like where it started. And then at the same time, it was like those AOL dial-up chat rooms where you would mm-hmm. like have to wait 20 minutes to get in. And, you know, I was 15 years old and dabbling in like this little world. Mm-hmm. And, we had a wild hair up our ass and we were like, let's go to New Orleans and see if we can like get into the gay bars. And I will never forget this night. Like I maybe just turned 16 years old, and I was wearing like a unicorn crop top and I had like glitter. So, oh my God. So you remember those like little gumball machines at the grocery store? So they used to sell these like gumballs of glitter paint. And so like I would hide them from my parents. Anyway, like we had like put glitter on our eyes and like did this thing. And
Oh yeah.
we went to the Bourbon Pub in New Orleans, and the it has a that bar has a very distinct smell. Like it smells like New Orleans, just like bar. And Deborah Cox, nobody's supposed to be here, was playing. And I just remember taking this deep breath, being like, I'm safe. And it was the weirdest experience because like I hadn't felt safe my entire life. And I mean, I had my parents are amazing, my family was amazing, but like my queer self had never felt safe. And I finally got that opportunity to like just breathe. And they served us. They did. They served us there at the bar at 15 years old in New Orleans. And that was my first drink. And shortly after that, I wanted that feeling every night. You know, like growing up in this household where, you know, I didn't when I was younger, like I knew I was very bullied in school. And so I knew the way that I was feeling, and I knew because of the way that I was getting bullied that like I couldn't talk about the way that I was feeling because it wasn't okay societally. And I would go home, and my alcoholic father, you know, would be he wasn't like he wouldn't like come home and beat the shit out of me every day, but like, you know, I definitely got my can I curse on here?
Yeah, absolutely.
I had gotten my ass beat, you know, a few times, but there was just always chaos in my house. My mom was a workaholic and my dad was an alcoholic. And so, you know, it was just a challenging childhood. So when I got to go to that place in that bar where I could like breathe and feel free, like I wanted that feeling every single night. And so I got really crafty and started sneaking out in the middle of the night and like going to New Orleans, being gay at night at you know, very young 16, and then coming home and being home before my parents woke up in the morning. And one night I didn't make it home before they woke up, and I'd walked in the door with like glitter all over my face, and I came out to my parents. And it was right around that time that like my grades started declining in school. I got caught smoking in the parking lot. Like you know, I was on the brink of expulsion at school because I had just gotten suspended so many times for like behavioral issues. And I just had all of this like pent up emotion that like I didn't know where to put it. And it was all like figuring out how to be who I was in a place where I couldn't be who I was. And so it came out like in the form of rebellion. You know, it got to the point where my parents were tired of me, and rightfully so, because I was like a terrible teenager. And my parents and I decided that I would be emancipated. So at 16 years old, I became a legal adult, which in Louisiana, you can just basically sign your rights away as parents. And obviously, that was the cause for like a lot of abandonment issues in my life. And so I moved to New Orleans and very quickly became a sex worker and a drug dealer. Like, I mean, to be honest, from that like first drink to like being out on my own living in New Orleans and engaging in like this crazy lifestyle, it was about a 3 month period. Like,
That's quick.
it wasn't like, yeah, it was like, you know, the minute I got that taste of freedom, I just couldn't stop. And so, have you been to New Orleans before?
I have not, no.
So it is a, you know, it's an interesting city because it is, you know, there's a lot of culture. There's amazing food. And it is about 18 blocks where some of the seediest stuff happens, and like crystal meth runs rampant. It's just like it is, it's a wild city. And you know, very, very quickly, my addiction took off. And You know, they say in the rooms, like, it starts with fun and then fun with problems and then problems. And so for me, that was very much my story. I was engaging, and because for me, it was for survival at that point. You know, I was 16 years old. And so it just got very dark very quick. You know, I started trafficking drugs for people back and forth from like Arizona to New Orleans and going to Mexico and getting all this K. And like, you know, I just had built this business, you know, and so it got really crazy. And then Hurricane Katrina happened. And I was displaced to Chicago after Hurricane Katrina. It was, you know, I was just 18 in the very early stages of 19. And it was the first winter in Chicago. I got super sick, and I was at the grocery store, and I fainted in the grocery store and woke up in the hospital. And when I woke up in the hospital, I was told that I had 14 T cells. My viral load was over a million. I was, you
Wow.
know, had an AIDS diagnosis, and this was in 2004 or 2005. And so, you know, it wasn't as taught, like it wasn't like where we're at today. You know what I mean? It was just a much different place. And you know, I was in the hospital for 2 weeks. I hadn't talked to my parents in 2 years. I was 18 years old, and I had nobody. You know, like all I had were people that I would sell drugs to, and you know, and I was so lost. I was in a brand new city, and I was lost. My angel there, her name was Kristen Keglovitz, and we still talk today. She was the nurse practitioner at the hospital. And I was her very first patient ever in life. Like, she had just started that day, like her first patient. And now she's the director of one of the biggest like nonprofit AIDS organizations in Illinois. You know, it's just crazy how that happened. But you know, she looked at me and she goes, "Paulo, tonight's the night you can live or you can die, and you need to make your choice." And so luckily, I was still considered a youth at the time. And so I got all of these services provided to me by Howard Brown Health Center. And I was in their youth program, and I was signed up for like this IOP program called Crystal Clear. CMA had just started in Chicago. There was like six people in the room. And I walked into that meeting at 18 years old, like with 14 T cells. And I didn't even know how to tie my shoes. Like, I didn't have a bank account. I didn't have, you know what I mean? Like, I was a street kid. And the men in that room just kind of like took me in. I will never forget it. I'll never forget what they did for me. You know, it was stuff like bringing me to food pantries and, you know, just like making sure I got to meetings and making sure I got to my doctor's appointments and just like all of this stuff. And it was a wild time. You know, it was amazing. And at 90 days sober, they were like, "Girl, you need to get a job." And I was like, I've never worked a day in my life. Like, I don't know how to do this. And so it was online job applications were just like becoming a thing. And so I submitted my application to all of these places, and I got a call back from a luxury retailer. And I went in for an interview. And again, this is another pivotal moment where, like, I'll never forget what happened. This woman, she was the store manager of the store on Michigan Avenue, and she was like, "Why should I hire you?" And I just started crying in my interview. And I was like, "I'm 90 day. I was like, I'm 90 days sober. I have no idea what I'm doing." But I said, "I just need someone to have more faith in me than I can have in myself." And she was sober, and she hired me. And I was a cosmetic stock boy making $8 an hour at this retailer on Michigan Avenue. And I moved from stock to the floor. And it turns out selling cosmetics is really like selling crystal meth. You know, I mean, you throw it a gift with purchase and like suddenly you can build this business. I left that retailer 8 years later as an executive director for their whole program that I built out for cosmetic personal styling. And I had like really built this name for myself in the beauty industry. And in that 8 years, I had started building a relationship with my family. I started doing the work in this program. I was building this community. 'Cause like when I was getting high, all I wanted was to be loved. You know, all I wanted was a community. All I wanted was what I just wanted friendships and like friendships that meant something. And so I would like look for that in my using all the time. And then obviously, as you can imagine, like, and the what my life was like as someone who was, you know, distributing drugs, like it was just, I couldn't trust anybody and it was just crazy. So I found all of that like in the rooms. And this company had moved me from Chicago to Florida to Miami, and then I ended up in LA. And shortly after I was in LA, I was diagnosed with testicular cancer. And I built my relationship with my parents. I'd done my amends and all of this, but I didn't want to tell them about my cancer because I hadn't told them about my HIV status. Like I just wasn't ready to do that yet. And so I started keeping secrets. I was driving home from UCLA after getting like this really huge dose of chemotherapy. And I was like literally driving down the 405, puking out of the side of my car. And my mom called me and she was like, "What's going on?" And I'm like, I'm fine, I'm fine." And my mom just knew something wasn't right. So the next day she showed up at my house in LA and I had no hair anywhere on my body because I was literally going through chemo. And again, I'll never forget this. My mom said, "How could you take the ability away from me to be a mother?" And when she said that, like it just rocked me to my core, because I knew I was keeping the secret about my status. I wasn't in a place where I was so scared of losing them again that like I didn't feel safe enough to share that with them yet. And so anyway, at the same time, I beat cancer and I was new in LA and my career was taking off and my sobriety was great. And have you been to meetings here in LA or like met like seen the community here? So it's different than anywhere that I've ever been in the country. Like the LA recovery community is just wild. Everybody's beautiful. Everybody is, as a newcomer or like new to the city, like you look at this life and you're like, fuck, like how the fuck do these people like live this lifestyle, you know, sober? And like you get in that like compare and despair kind of thing. And anyway, but all that egotistical stuff aside, like you take all that out of it, the program is absolutely amazing. So anyway, I met a guy at a meeting and he was beautiful. And so I was new to LA. I'm like, yeah, like beautiful guy, let's do it. We start dating and he starts beating the shit out of me. And vice versa, you know what I mean? At that point, it just turned into a very toxic relationship. But I was doing makeup for a living. So I would literally go to meetings with like a face full of makeup on, pretending that I wasn't going home and my boyfriend was beating the shit out of me. And I'd just beat cancer and all of this stuff. So it was crazy. So he ended up committing suicide and I needed to get out of LA. So I moved to Atlanta with work. I took a new position and I guess I'll say if like you ever want to get sober, don't move to Atlanta. anyway, so he committed suicide and I relapsed after, 8.5 years sober. I was living in Atlanta. I was 25 or 26 years old, making a shit ton of money, doing something that I loved. I was closer to my parents in New Orleans, so I was going back and forth between like Atlanta and New Orleans. And I walked into that bar and I smelled that bar. You know, I smelled that New Orleans kind of like bar, and I remember somebody offered me a dose of G, and I had this like very clear thought, like, am I about to throw away 8.5 years for like one dose of G? And that was my thought. It was one dose, right? And that one dose turned into 3 years of misery. A week after I had relapsed, I got arrested with 2 pounds of dope in Alabama, driving from New Orleans to Atlanta. And so, like, my addiction picked up right where it left off. Like, I don't know how to use responsibly. The minute that I start using, I go back into this like survival mode of like, I have to make money, I have to do this. And it's just, my addiction is really wrapped around a lot more than just using. It's wrapped around the distribution side of things, and it's wild.
Interesting.
I got arrested in Alabama, and I was like, well, fuck it, now I need to move back to LA because my source is there. And so I go back to LA, and I'm fighting this case in Alabama. So I start, selling drugs, and everybody that would come over and buy a bag, I would have them sign a meeting slip for me. And I get crafty when I'm high. I get crafty when I'm high. And so I went to court in Alabama with like this like book I had made, this binder I had made of like laminated meeting slips. And I told the judge, like, hey, I moved to LA, I'm trying to get sober, here's all my meeting slips. And she goes, well, I don't want the taxpayers of Alabama to have to pay for someone who lives in California and is trying to get sober. So 2 years on supervised probation. And in this time, I was high. Like, I was fucking loaded, right? And so that was just, I was like, fuck, I got away with like a life sentence with like fucking with 2 years unsupervised probation. And like, it just kept going for me. I was doing some really crazy things with the mail and drugs and to across the country, and I was flying with all this stuff, and it just got really big. Like my I was working for the cartel. I don't even speak Spanish, and I would like have a gun to my head using Google Translate. Like all this just like crazy stuff. And I was living in Illinois in Chicago again. I went back to Chicago and was back and forth from LA to Chicago, and I started using intravenously. And for me, that was like a blessing and a curse. It brought me to my knees much faster than I thought it, I think it would have if I hadn't have started that. It was some of the darkest times of my life. I'm getting to that, and I'm getting sober, I promise.
No, you're not.
My apartment in Chicago ended up getting raided, and there luckily wasn't anything there. It was at a different place, and so I left Chicago sketched out and went to I was like, I'll just go to San Francisco for Dory Alley. And I went to San Francisco for Dory Alley, ended up staying through Folsom, which is like 2.5 months, something like that. And in that time, I just managed, like, I was so sketched out from like my apartment getting raided that like I just kind of lost everything. I wasn't really trying to work, I wasn't trying to do these big transactions. And I went from like having this like huge drug business to like being sitting at a bus stop with like no money and no dope. And it was a blessing and a curse. Like, I couldn't stop using intravenously. And so I was sitting at a bus stop in San Francisco, and this is where it gets a little graphic, but I mean, it's my story. I was literally just taking a syringe and like popping it in my neck, trying to like find a vein at a bus stop. And I got a staph infection in my neck. Again, I don't know how to get sober unless I'm dying. The doctor in the hospital, follow, like, you're dying. Like, you have to get sober. Like, you cannot continue doing this. And so I had some roots in LA recovery and came back here. And that's where my sobriety journey started. And that was October 7th, 2015. It's absolutely crazy. And when I got sober this time, I did whatever anyone told me to. Like, there was no kind of like questioning anything. I wasn't like, I just did whatever I was told. And in my first sobriety, things happened very quickly. Like I got that job at 90 days, like all of this stuff was happening, and like my life came together really quick. When I got sober this time, like that was just not the story at all. No, it was slow and it was humbling, and like I needed all of that. Like my ego had gotten so big, that like I needed to. If I would have never built everything from when I got sober this time, I wouldn't. I know I wouldn't be where I am today, and I definitely wouldn't appreciate it, the way that I do. And the sobriety journey has been so beautiful. I've gone through some of the hardest things in my life in the sobriety. I lost my mom 2 years ago, or three years ago in August. And so today being Mother's Day, it's been a really like reflective day for me.
Absolutely.
And there's been some crazy things that I've had to walk through. People have died. I've lost a lot of friends in this program, and I lost my mom, and I've gotten fired. I've lost jobs. The pandemic happened. All of this crazy stuff, and I'm just in a place today of like knowing and understanding that like I'm gonna be okay as long as I do the work. And for me, the work looks like, for me, a huge part of my sobriety is the connection piece. Like, is the, working with my sponsees. I have three beautiful sponsees. Again, I'm very involved in service. I'm a service whore. Being in the book with my sponsees, and also with my sponsor, again, my life is just revolves around being sober. Like again, I work in treatment. I'm very involved in the rooms, and I don't know. I'm just so grateful for this big, beautiful life I have today. I can't even talk about it. I mean, it's just crazy because I didn't think I would make it to 18. I never anticipated having anything. I remember when I got my first debit card, and because like all of my transactions were through like fucking Green Dot and PayPal. Like I didn't get a debit card until I got sober, and I called my sponsor and I was like, what do I do with this chip? Like I didn't know that like you insert the chip into the thing. Like I hadn't been around society, and so anyway, yeah, I mean that's my life today, and it's just living happy, joyous, and free, and I met my husband in the rooms, and we have the most beautiful relationship, and we're about to be dads. We're in the final stages of adoption,
Oh, that's fantastic. Wow.
So like that's happening.
That's
I'm finishing
super.
school. I had a ninth grade education until 4 years ago. Like I dropped out of school when I was 16. So like I'm now putting myself through college. I'm on the dean's list at college studying behavioral health. And like my husband and I own it's a program called No Matter What Recovery. We opened it about 3.5 years ago, and we started as an outpatient facility with one sober living, and we've grown into five sober livings, an outpatient facility, and we just opened a detox, a 6-bed detox residential. So we have like 40 employees, and our treatment center and our business is growing, and we specialize in LGBT affirming care, and we have a huge focus on chem sex, which is substance use and sex, primarily crystal meth, and we created a program called the Trans Experience, where we focus on trans, non-binary, and gender non-conforming individuals, and then trauma. And working in this industry and like having the ability to like have people trust us with their care is just something that I don't take lightly. And it's just such a beautiful life that I have today. And I thank you for asking me to be here, by the way, and
Of
like sharing
course.
my story with you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an incredible story. You're doing really amazing things. I mean, there's nothing like really like giving back to the community that, helped you out of your darkest times. I mean, even just doing this, I mean, compared to what you're doing, this is just a cute little simple thing I'm doing, but it is rewarding to have people be like so thankful for everything you do. So you sounds like you got it going on, bro.
Trying.
Doing great, doing
Yeah.
great.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I mean, that's great. So besides, obviously, you've spoken at length about the rooms and about that. Is there anything else that you use kind of in your sobriety toolbox? Like, do you do journaling? Do you do kind of what keeps you day to day sober?
I would love to say that I do gratitude lists every day, and I would love to say that I journal, and I would love to say that I do all of these things. I go through phases. And so, but what I really do, I even at almost 8.5 years sober, I really do go to almost four meetings a week, maybe if not five. Like I'm very involved in the rooms here. I would love to say that I meditate every day. I'd love to say all of that, but really what I do is I talk to my mom in the car.
There you go.
And for me, like that is, and I live in LA, so I live in the valley, I'm in Woodland Hills. So I'm in the car a lot. And it's just a really great way for me to connect. I had issues with the God thing and the higher power thing, like I think a lot of us do coming into this room, like our religious trauma and everything. And a week before my mom died, I had a really shitty day. And I remember like praying and being like, I don't know. I need you to show yourself to me. Like I have to be able to believe in you. Like they say in the rooms, like you have to have faith in this higher power. And like, I don't know you. And I literally had that conversation in the car. And about a week later, my mom passed away. And so in a really weird way, my mom has kind of become my guiding light, my higher power. And I had a really crazy experience this week. I don't know how much time we have, but
Not the time you need.
I decided to hire a medium.
Okay. Come on, LA.
And I hired a medium, and he's actually in New Jersey. And I was walking into it with like this, like, if I get to connect with my mom, that would be absolutely amazing. But like, I'm leaving my expectations very low. When my mom passed, she was like my best friend, and I got all that through sobriety. Like,
Of course.
I don't want to leave the because at the beginning I was talking about like how terrible my childhood is, was at times. But like, I have the most amazing relationship with my family today, and it's all due to sobriety. I mean, my parents fly out, my whole family flies out here every year and gives me a cake for my sober birthday. I mean, like, my dad that beat the shit out of me for being gay walked me down the aisle when I married my husband 2 years. I mean, like, the program has like changed my relationship with my family. And I think also just time has changed that relationship. My dad, I do drag for fundraisers here. My dad comes to all of my drag shows whenever he's like, it's crazy. I mean, so my parents and I have the most amazing relationship. But anyway, so when I was meeting with this medium, my dad and my mom's sister were there, and he connected with my mom
There you
and
go.
new things that like you couldn't Google.
Isn't that wild? I've had an
So
experience like that before. I was outside of a bar in Boston, and this guy just like came up to me and had this kind of m this psychic moment, and I was just like, how did you like it shocks you sometimes.
I left that feeling. I was like, oh my God, this actually happened. And then about 10 minutes later, I was in spin class like after the call. So I guess it was like 30 minutes later. The people on my marketing team texted me, and they were like, hey, you have to listen to this call that just came through. And he sent it to me. And it was one of my mom's friends from high school. And she couldn't get in touch. She didn't know my number. So she called my company. Like she had Googled me and like called my company. And they're doing like this 8 year or this reunion at my mom's. She went to the store, this school called Cabrini in New Orleans, and they're doing a memorial service for all the people that have died in their class. They've lost eight. And so I'm like flying into New Orleans in 2 weeks to like go to this memorial because it happened 30 minutes after I got off the call with this medium. Like it was the weirdest, just like thing. And then that's the kind of stuff where like I'm driving in that car and I'm like, higher power, show yourself to me, 'cause like I don't know who you are, to like having that kind of stuff where it's like, for me, like that kind of stuff is like, so like, I just know I'm not alone.
Crazy.
And, but yeah, I mean, I, you know, I, so connecting with my mom and, or my high, my higher power in that way. And just like really being very visible in the rooms, Yeah, that's really kind of like my secret sauce. It's, sponsorship, service, doing work and doing, work in the book and just like building a community for me is really what's worked.
That's amazing. Yeah, I had a really incredibly like wild higher power moment too, which was actually even before I got sober, but it's some of these things just like knock you to the ground. Like you just like there's no way that this all these coincidences or these people could. It's like just like wow, it's really sometimes it like really shakes you. You're like
So, do you
wow,
live in Boston?
I do. Yes, I live in Boston.
Do you know James C?
Maybe.
So, James C is a really good friend of mine. He lives in Boston. He's sober. He's got like probably 20 years now. The only time I've ever been to Boston, he was like, "Girl, you got to come up here and like detox." So he flew me up to Salem. Is that where there's
Oh yeah.
somewhere? Flew me up there, and I slept on a sofa for like 3 weeks, and then left and got high again. But it was Boston was beautiful.
Cute up here. It's cute. If you like, yeah, if you really if you're into like architect like old architecture and historical, like it's a hit. I mean, we're, our gay scene is like fine, but the city itself is beautiful. And of course, Provincetown is off
Right
the
there.
charts. Amazing. Love it.
Is that where you're from originally?
I'm from Boston, like about 12 miles north of the city, so not too far from Salem, actually.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, a little south of Reading.
I was in also I had we went to Cape Cod for a work conference last year, and like I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna have the best seafood in the world. And I'd packed these like chinos and like white linen shirts and like
Come
got
on.
there, and that it was like so humid. I stayed in my room the whole time. Like
Welcome to
the
Massachusetts in the
fantasy was
summer. Yeah,
like ruined.
my partner works in P Town for the summer, so I'll be there like more than I probably should be, but
That's
it's cute there.
amazing.
It's lovely. So I mean, it's my home away from home in that little spot. It is humid. It does get gross up here, I'm not gonna lie. But hey, it is what it is. So
Totally.
if you could, if you could send a shout out or kind of, speak on someone that's been your biggest supporter, who would that person be?
Oh God.
Kind of already have, but like, if you would.
There's been a few. I've had a few people in my life that have like cheered me on along the way, and I would say the first one is Ashley. And she was my Eskimo. And when I had that moment of in San Francisco where I had the MRSA in my neck and I needed to get sober, I called her. And she drove me to treatment. And she's a woman of trans experience who's had a really crazy life. And I say in my show, like I wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for a trans woman. And that's why that community means so much to me, is because like I've made it my life's mission to fight for that population and for that community. And I she really is at the forefront of like any success that I've had in my life.
Amazing.
So that would be my first one. Obviously my husband today is he puts up with my shit. We have the most beautiful relationship, and we're able to build this, this huge kind of brand together and do it sober and communicate effectively. Like it's just wild the way that like a healthy relationship works.
Isn't
Because like my default was like, if you beat the shit out of me, I loved you. Like that was what I was able to do at a certain point in my life. And so today, like my husband is probably my biggest cheerleader and advocate. And I just I'm so grateful for him and our relationship and life that we built.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, my boyfriend is also sober, so there's just a certain like level of understanding that we both have for each other. And in a previous relationship, I was dating someone that was absolutely amazing in every single way, but he was not in recovery. And there was this one moment where I was sharing with this particular person just one of my crazy stories. And he just kind of looked at me and said, "But you're never gonna do that again, are you?" And it was that kind of disconnect of like, I would love to stand here right now and say, no, never again.
No.
You clearly don't understand what addiction is.
Right.
And to say, like, oh, but that's over forever, forever. I would love to say it's over forever, forever, but you have to understand that the addicted brain is something that is sometimes unpredictable, whereas
Totally.
someone who's in recovery understands that kind of mindset. But it really is nice to just kind of have that settled understanding of what you've both gone through. So that's I definitely relate to that 100%.
And the journey's been amazing with us. Like, we met in the rooms. We were friends for 7 years before we started dating. And you know, it was we have our separate meetings that we go to. We have he has his sponsor, his sponsees. I have my sponsor, my sponsees. We have our separate lives and in recovery. And then we're able to go to meetings together and go to fellowship together. And it's really cool. We're both on committees together, and you know, we have different roles. And yeah, it's the same thing with kind of our business, you know, like I handle one part of the business and he handles the other, and we're able to communicate effectively and lovingly. And, you know, and there's sometimes, you know, we disagree and we're able to handle the disagreements with grace. And like that for me is like just wild, you know, because like I've never been in a relationship where we've both done the work.
Yeah, exactly. It's really cool. So if you could give one piece of advice to a newly sober person, what would that advice be?
Like my real honest advice, or like my beauty pageant answer.
Let's get some real honest advice here.
So it would
We're
be
not
sit
around.
down, shut up, and do the work. Like that for me is like, it's just like shut the fuck up and listen. And like, you know, like I'm sure your story is super valuable, and like, you know, all of your experiences are valuable, but like at the end of the day, like you have to hear what people are talking about in the beginning, and stop thinking about yourself, because it's not about you.
That's solid. So, I'm really open online about my recovery, and that's been one of my big things is like, you know, as an elder millennial, I try to lean in on the social media moment. I may not be the best at it, but I think one of the things that really helps me move through my sobriety is the people that reach out to me online. And one of the biggest things that I get a lot of times are people who have loved ones in active addiction kind of reaching out asking, what do I do? So what's a piece of advice you could give to someone who has a loved one who's currently in active addiction?
Set healthy boundaries. And it's hard. Like it is one of, like, you know, I mean, I obviously work with parents every day, and you know, it's with families of loved ones and addicts, and like telling your you wanting to help is like one of the best things in the world. But like if they aren't ready, you can't help them. And so, like, you know, as a family, like sometimes it takes cutting them off, or sometimes it takes you know, having those tough conversations, saying like, I love you, but like I cannot watch you do this. Call me when you're ready for help. And setting those healthy boundaries is probably the my advice for that person.
Yeah, it's really hard advice for people to take because that's the same thing that I tell people is you have to let them fall and hope they don't completely shatter by the time they're ready to get picked up. So, but you know, we all I'm you know, I think back to when my parents were kind of just like watching me fall to pieces and it's the addiction if it just is such a family disease, it's
Totally.
tough. It's really, really tough. So I run an organization here in Boston called Sober Gay Sunday, which is an organization for people in the LGBT community that are in recovery to do things like around the city that are fun and social and not always necessarily like about discussing our trauma. So we do things like axe throwing and we've done beach days and archery and painting and stuff like that. So if you could kind of pick one dream Sober Gay Sunday event to throw, what would it be?
Oh my God, that's amazing. First of all,
Thanks.
you know, I would love, and we do it here in LA all the time. I just like a sober tea dance, like get a really great DJ and some really great performers and drag queens and like food, and like just do like a cool like talent show kind of thing, where I don't know, just like I love a show. And I love being entertained, and I love dancing. So like if we could put all that together, one of the other things that people do here in LA is like this new kind of like headphone dance thing. I don't
Oh
know if
yeah, I've
it's
seen
made it
it.
there. Yeah, it's wild. And you just kind of like fucking like go hard with like all these people like on the beach, and you're like listening to your own
Silently.
music in your ear. But yeah, and we also do this thing here called Tweakers on Ice, which is ice skating.
Oh, cool.
you know, we have fun events here in LA. But yeah, I mean, like
That's
again,
cool.
that community piece is so important for me. If I don't have that community piece, like I don't know where I'd be. So like anything with people, that's amazing, you know, that are sober, and like y'all can get together and like do things. So I love that idea. I think it's really cool. Is it taking off, or y'all do it every
So
Sunday, or?
It's been pretty good. I mean, here's the thing, I'll be honest. Like, I mean, I work a 6 day a week job. I coach gymnastics full time.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, so it's and it's you know, dealing with teenage girls for 40 hours a week, which is a lot. But it is fun when people can get their shit together and come. Like,
Get a bunch of sober gays trying to plan an event is a whole.
yes, it is. Gathering homosexuals in general is hard, and now to like try to get a bunch of, you know, sober guys together, I'm just like, okay, that's fine. It's I have 200 emails, but four of you showed up. It's fine.
And my favorite is when you have like a 6 month planning committee and people still forget the linens. It's like, why are
Yes.
we talking about this 6 months in advance? Like, we have a blueprint. Let's just do it. We'll have three meetings, knock it out. Let's get it going.
Right. Some of our
Yeah.
stuff has been off the charts, super cool. It's also just, you know, about like keep it piquing their interest, and then there's the money and there's this expense that. So I'm doing my best. Let's say that. We'll see.
Yeah, it's the politics of it, for people that come to these events, they're like, oh, it's great. Like, for the people that are like involved in the service, there's a lot that goes into
It's
it.
stressful. Yeah, it's stressful. Like
Yeah,
I
yeah.
every time I have an event, like I wake up in the morning with butterflies in my stomach. Like, is it gonna go well? Are people gonna come? And then of course there's
Totally.
like the gaggle of guys that just kind of cancel the last minute. And people are always incredibly thankful. And it's always a blast and it's always wonderful, but it's just kind of the matter of like wrangling the gaggle to show up. That is hard.
For this last CMALA, which if you haven't made it, you really should. I mean, the convention, the CMA, the it's the best convention I've been to,
Yeah.
and it's just so amazing, and I'm a huge advocate for it because I got sober in it, and it kept me
Yeah.
sober. But anyway, I was the entertainment chair for last year, and I wrote a show that was very personal to me, and I basically took all of my favorite Broadway numbers
Fun.
and you know, we're in LA, so there's people that are in recovery here that are like in the industry and that are very, very talented.
Yeah, of
And
course.
it was a top level like talent. And so like I rewrote Broadway songs and turned them about recovery. So like instead of like Defying Gravity from Wicked, it was Trying Recovery. And we would like rewrite these songs
Fun.
and put them in the show. And we started rehearsals in January and auditions, and it just happened a few weeks ago. And it's just so much work, especially like getting, 30 talented people together that are sober in all different lengths of time, right? Like you could have a newcomer to like somebody with 20 years,
Yeah.
and like putting all of the pieces together and making sure that like everybody is featured and nobody feels left out, and making sure that
Yeah.
like the community aspect is there, and then putting on a good show. It's like it's a lot of pressure, but the show was very personal to me because I put my story with my mom in it. Me and my mom's song was Candle on the Water from Peach Dragon. It's a very dramatic song. And so anyway, we had someone play my mom in the show, and like I just kind of like lost it. Like
Oh, yeah.
it was just one of the most amazing experiences of my sobriety. And
Fun.
so now I just got elected into like the executive level past like the entertainment. And to be honest, I'm really sad because like I love a show.
Yeah, right. You're like, I like that part. That was so fun. Yeah, we've had some, like really great times. And we actually, you mentioned, you know, a sober tea dance, and where there's a gym that across the country, the Phoenix, it's a sober
Oh
gym.
yeah. Yeah.
So we have one here in Boston.
Amazing.
And they have been a dream to work with because they've got a big ass space and they're totally down for like anything I want to do. So we're like there like 90% of the time for my events now, but they're doing a sober tea dance with pride, which is going to be
Oh, amazing.
phenomenal. We have like three DJs, we got drag queens, we have there's a alcohol-free bottle shop that opened up in Boston.
Oh, cool. Love
And
it.
so
They're popping
they're
up everywhere here,
Yeah,
too.
it's incredible. So they're going to be involved in stuff like that. So that's going to be super exciting. That's on June 1st here in Boston, which is going to be super awesome. I of course, because I coach gymnastics, this is my busy season, and
Yeah.
three of my kids have qualified from the state championships to regionals, which is
Oh,
great
wow.
and huge and like really a big deal. And of course, regionals on June 1st. So we're going to try to figure out if we can run from gymnastics to a gay sober event, which is
You'll do it. You'll make it happen,
Oh my God, there's nothing more jarring than
you
going from hanging out with your like 14-year-olds to a bunch of gay guys. It's a lot.
know? Yeah, the Phoenix is really big out here too. We work really closely with them, and you know, we've kind of seen it from its infancy out here. I think they started in like Denver, and then LA was like the second market, and they do such cool work. It's such a cool organization.
Oh, yeah. Their facility here is like this big, huge rock climbing gym with like
Oh my
weights,
God.
and it's amazing. We had a rock climbing event. That was like the first thing we did, and it was just it's fabulous.
That's awesome.
They're great. Like one of the their directors is in my organization. So him and I have been just like brainstorming and working together, and it's nice to talk to somebody that has like similar issues with me, because like the Phoenix is having a little bit of trouble like pulling people in for events, because not everyone wants to get physical and do weightlifting or all this thing. So it's been great. They're really, really great, and I can't, sing their praises enough. So I'm loving
That's
them.
amazing. I
Yeah.
love it. I love it.
So now that we're kind of wrapping up, where can people find you? Where is a good place on social media for people to get a hold of you?
So, I love Facebook. I don't know why my husband makes fun of me because he's like such an Instagrammer. But my Facebook is Paulo Anthony Arenaga Grayson. And my name is Paulo. So like people like, you know, at Starbucks, I'm Paul. But I go by Paulo, or my name is Paulo. So whenever I would have to explain to anybody that like my name is just Paul with an O, that's my handle. So it's just Paul with an O, I think HH at the end of it. Hold on, I don't even know. Please hold. Your call will be directed.
Right, there we go.
it's Paul with an O, Paul. Of course I can't find it. It's Paul with an OHH. Is my IG. And yeah, and I'm, you know, come to meetings in LA and you'll definitely see me.
Awesome. So I want to thank you very much for being on. This has been really an
Thank you
impressive
for having
story.
me.
Of
What you're
course.
doing is so cool. I
Thank
think, you
you.
know, having technology is so cool. And I hope that, you know, people that may not have access to the kind of like, you know, bigger city resources that we have, like in Boston and LA, get the opportunity to hear this and understand and know that like your life can change
Yeah,
and
it's
you
been
know.
really rewarding. One of the things that I use a distribution website to get this sent out everywhere. So it's on Amazon, it's on, Apple, it's on all the podcast places you can even think of, some of the stuff I've never even heard of. But one of the features they have is a map of the world, and where my podcast is being listened to is getting pinged all over with little red dots. And so I just pull that map up every once in a while, and there's a map of the world, and here my podcast is being listened to all over the globe. It's
That's
wild.
crazy.
I'm like, that's insane. So that's been one of the, I think it's really, really cool to just reach people you'd never think would ever even hear your voice.
Well, congratulations. That's amazing. And
Thank
thank
you
you for the
very
work that
much.
you're doing.
Absolutely. And again, thank you so much for coming on.
Of course.
Thank you for tuning into the Sober Gay Sunday podcast. Please feel free to like, subscribe, share, and comment. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Sober Gay Sunday. You can also email me directly at sobergaysunday@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, stay sober, guys.
I'm so sick of small talk, and tell me something you're topping, hit me on the head with your biggest mistakes. I don't want your daily drama, fill me in on family traumas, tell me all the medication that you take. Cause life's so short, we're playing so fast.